Good morning, everyone. I have jokes. I have stories about unusual chickens that I have to tell you, which is a teaser that comes later. I have a sermon. It was all a little much for my brain today, so I have a little help here. This reading is, of course, sort of inextricably wrapped up with the reading from last week, Why Devotees Fall, which Swami spoke about here. And for those of you who were not here last week, the biggest part of me wants to say, please go back and watch Jyotish and Devi's sermon. It was really quite remarkable. On the other hand, I think here we are, we're talking about how devotees rise. And I'm a little reluctant to say, let's do this today, and then you go back and get into the fall. But Devi saves us in the end of last week, and she really spoke about rising. So I've told you before that Swamiji has mentioned, he mentions this just outwardly to anybody. Anytime you're going to give a talk, it's always good if you can start with a joke. And he's so brave about it. He'll just stand up and tell a joke that has nothing to do with what he's about to talk about. And I'm not that brave. But every once in a while, the perfect joke just presents itself. A few times that's happened for me. So right after I read the title of the talk, How Devotees Rise. Of course, we're talking about rising to that place of oneness, superconsciousness, into divine bliss. This joke came across my desk. That's a picture, which I doubt you can see, but it's obviously a man who's very deep in meditation. He's away up in the mountains. He's got headphones on and a microphone. And the caption under it says, have you tried turning off your conscious mind, then turning it back on again? Now, why didn't we think of just rebooting? This is the age of energy. There's a friend of mine who I've been spending a little more time than usual with, and I'm going to tell a little story about him. I don't think he's here, but if you are, forgive me. I'm not making fun of you. In fact, I'm feeling deeply respectful of you. But he's an Indian man. And we were visiting last week, and I probably said one too many times the line about it's simple but not easy. And he just said, why do Americans always say that? He said, he's Indian. Indians never say that, he said. Indians, doesn't matter what difference does it make if it's easy or hard. This is what he's telling me. He's the Indian expert. We just do it. Why do we have to talk about how hard it is? Really raised an interesting question. Except that in the course of our visit and our walk that day, many, many times, and he was talking to me and asking me for a little, he was asking for my opinion about things, let's just say that. And he would like tell me about a little annoyance with this particular person because didn't they know that there was a way to do certain things? There is a way that you cook a certain meal or you set a table or you do something at work. And throughout the whole talk that we were having, he kept reminding me that there's a very particular way, he's sure of it, and if somebody doesn't do X, Y, or Z that way, he's totally justified in being annoyed. And I said to him, this is why we say it's simple but not easy. Because here we are, and we're talking about delusion. And delusion is extraordinarily difficult. This is how devotees fall. But hopefully we'll move from here. But still, we have to talk a little bit about it. If all delusions were grand and obvious, none of us would get caught. It's the little delusions, it's the way that they are, that they're relentless in our lives, and they are. That they're, I know a few weeks ago when I was giving a sermon, I said the topic of the sermon was, what is the best way to worship? Remember I told you God played that little riddle and joke with me, and finally I figured out there is no best way to worship. We each have our own unique way to worship because worship means that path that we're taking back to God. And every one of us in our spine are different And I said then, and it's true, we have individualized our delusions. We've made them just perfect for us. It's like the perfect fit. So they feel right. We're sure they're right. Then they become habitual. And not only do delusions become habitual, but I'm sure any of you who have tried to get on top of one know, they hold on with a ferocity where they do not want to be exposed. And then we add to that this little dollop of self-righteousness, which he was doing and which I have done many times. And you can see why we have to remind ourselves that it's simple, but it's not easy to rise above delusion, to choose that path so that we're not falling into that place of ego-centeredness, but really finding our way out of that and into the light. This reading this story brought up, this is actually a rather personal story that I'm about to share with you, but it was probably one of the more pivotal moments in my life, and not just because of where it led me, but because of my own stupidity that I got to look at. But I was about to make a decision in my life that, as Asha always says, these decisions always just seem so right in the moment. You're just sure of it, in large part because of the way we get caught with delusions. But it was a very bad decision. I didn't know that. And my teacher at the time, Sankeshava Das, who you've heard me mention many times, called me upstairs and he said to me, "Shanti Ma," with such love and such devotion in his eyes, "you really should think about this. This is not," he didn't say you shouldn't do it. He said to me, "if you do this, people you don't even know will suffer for years and years." Now, this is a man who was revered as a saint. I had the great good blessing of being in his company. And you know what I did? I yelled at him, and I fought with him. And I said to him, "you're God, right? If you're God and it's not right, you change my heart. You change my mind. Otherwise, I'm doing it." I did it. And I've lived with it. And I've lived with knowing that he was right. People I didn't even know have suffered. It's just an example. It doesn't matter. But when we talk about, I'll bet if I could go back into my mind in that time, which was many, many years ago, I probably felt in my mind that I knew as much about the spiritual path then as I do now. I wasn't thinking to myself, "you don't know anything. Listen to him. Whatever he says, listen." I was, that delusion was habituated. It was fighting fiercely to hold on. And as I said, a huge dose of self-righteousness. It's not easy. I'm not a bad person. None of you are bad people. We're not looking to do bad things. But that lesson taught me, with great humility, that very good people can, in fact, do bad things. Probably, I don't know why I went through that. I don't know what the karma was. But one of the bits of karma that came out of that was a much greater compassion for and understanding of very good people making mistakes. Many times I've been able to use that. I don't want to say 100% of the time, but many times. Delusion is really difficult. So I thought, and I said to my friend, "no, we better hold that in our mind, that the spiritual path is simple, but not always easy." When we talk about moving towards how we rise, it feels essential to me that we talk a little bit about self-honesty, about being able to know who we are. What changes do we want to make in our life? Not what changes do we think we should make, because that's another way that we get into trouble on the path, trying to live somebody else's karma or somebody else's teachings. But what changes would we like to make? Devi told that adorable story last week about her son, Mark, who was about 5 years old at the time. He's now in his late 30s. And he had had some incident. I don't remember what it was. I don't know if she mentioned it. And Jyotish was counseling him and telling him, you know, Mark, even when people don't treat you well, you should really be nice to them. And this was Jyotish giving his son direction. And Mark was crying. And Devi said very adorably, Mark looked up at his dad at one point and said, Daddy, I don't want to be that kind of person. You know, to be able to own who we are. I've seen it so often. A patient came to mind this morning who had come to me years ago, who was having daily headaches for years, daily headaches. I think I've told some of you this story. And something just got my attention about him. And I remember I said to him, are you sure you're ready to be, you want these headaches to go away? And he looked at me, not just like I had lost my mind, but he was very angry with me. Of course I want these headaches to go away. Why would I want to keep the headaches? Well, it was an interesting client because Connie Hernandez was working with me, with this client. She was working naturopathically. I was working the way I work. And sure enough, within a couple of months, his headaches were gone. And he came in one day and very sweetly said to me, I need to have my headaches back. He was really able to get. I mean, it was so honest and took such courage to say, I'm not there yet. Whatever way that pain is serving me, I still need it. How can we possibly move forward on the path, on any path, until we really know where we are? There's another story of another client who had a chronic illness. He's long since died, but he had a chronic illness. For many, many years was incapacitated. And he was at home, and his wife was being a caregiver. And he came to see me, and I had the same feeling, asking him, do you want to be well? Of course he wanted to be well. One day he came in and he said, you know, you didn't tell me I didn't want to be well, but what you were alluding to is the truth. He said, if I get well, I'm afraid I'll lose my marriage. And these kinds of things happen. So first to get honest about where we are, what's our next step, what can we do, and then to remind ourselves that we always have a choice, that we can always make a choice. This is, in essence, when we're talking to how we rise, what we call free will. And I know many times, we all know maybe, or many of us have said, what does free will really mean? I'm not sure that I know what it really means, but I know that one piece of what it means is that we always have the choice to make a decision that will take us towards the light, that will help us rise, that will help us take our next step, maybe not every step, but that next step in the right direction, meaning the direction towards our higher self. Devi used this quote last week, but it's just so perfect. When Paramahansa said to his devotees, some of you will fall, but it need not be so, he said, if you can just stay in tune. But really, I don't want to change his words, but what I would want to say to us here now, the need not be so is essential, and we can say if we can just make the choice to move towards the light. I was talking to another friend of mine the other night, and I just mentioned the title of the talk. And when she went home, she wrote me an email. And she said, this thought just came to me on the way home, that the fall is insidious, she said. The rise is intentional. And I think when we hear Yogananda say, it struck me as being so true. The fall is insidious. The rise, we have to bring enormous energy to. That's the it's not easy part. So when Master says, some of you will fall, but it need not be so. If we can place our intentions in the right place and bring energy to it, we don't have to fall. Because we don't have to attain samadhi, we just need to be moving in the right direction. This is an amazing thing about the reading, and Swamiji talks about it today, when Jesus says, but me ye have not always with you. You know, there's so many ways that that could be understood. Jesus is actually really not sitting in that room all the time or in front of Judas. But we can't always be with the divine. So, of course, we don't always have them with us, not because they're not there, but because we can't do it. And this story about Mary, I was thinking about remembering, it must have been Asha, though I'm not 100% sure, who told the story about the enthusiasm with which Mary came in. I have no idea how she entered that room. But just right in, without a thought, God is here. I am going to rub his feet with this ointment. Very in tune with the master, you know, and then she takes her hair and wipes. It's a very dramatic story. And Judas is sitting there being very intellectual, saying, what are you doing? Why are you spending all this money? And I was thinking to myself, what would you do? I mean, if somebody said to you, God himself has appeared, he's waiting outside, he's in a body, and he'd like to see you right now. I mean, what would you say? Listen, I'm busy, tell him I'll see him later. You would go running out there. You would do anything to be near him. You know, it's interesting. I listened to this reading again just now. I probably hadn't read it in 2 or 3 days. So Swami just knocked my feeling kind of off the block, and rightfully. But last night I was thinking, when I was thinking about Mary, I've always felt such empathy for Sri Yukteswar. You know the story where Babaji appears to him and he gets so beside himself and he's like, just wait here, I've got to go get you a treat. And Babaji's saying, I don't want a treat. And he's saying, no, no, but I have to go. I've got to give you something, you're God. And then when he comes back, he's gone. And you remember the next time that Babaji appears, when Lahiri and Sri Yukteswar are together, Sri Yukteswar is pouting, and he won't pay any attention to Babaji. And Lahiri says, you're mad at him? You're going to treat him that way? And Sri Yukteswar says, yes, he left me. And then Sri Yukteswar has that wonderful line where he says, of course I left you. I was nearly extinguished into the ether by your restlessness. And I've always felt so sorry for Sri Yukteswar, because of course you'd want to give him something. I mean, I'm sure every mother in this room, or at least every Jewish mother, Indian mother, knows that you would want to go home and get something to feed your guru. Of course you would. But the word restlessness was very important, and Swamiji talked about that. How do we serve? We serve enthusiastically. We serve with energy. We serve God in as many ways as we can, but we do it being as inwardly attuned as we possibly can. When I used to spend much more time in India than I do now, I used to have such a longing. See, we never got to do this because we had Swamiji and we just didn't touch his feet, though I'm sure many of us would have wanted to. But when I used to be in India, oh, that feeling, that extraordinary bliss of touching the guru's feet. And you know that story of one of the disciples who was always seen rolling in the dirt behind his master. I could just so relate to that. That's how we serve God. You know, we had Rajasi Day here yesterday, and Rajasi was, of course, Master's great disciple that we all know. But Rajasi Day really honors that part of him. It reminds us that people can work out in the world, as Rajasi did, so successfully, and do it every moment loving God, that whatever we're doing in the world, if we do it with a love for God, that it is a part of how devotees rise. And yesterday we had Rajasi Day. It was such a great day. The energy here was fabulous. And several people who weren't here walked in and said, wow, the church looks great. People, you could just feel the energy. But there were two women, I'll let them be nameless, who were over back behind me here near the playground. You know, there's a sandbox, and there's always kids in the sandbox. And what are they going to do? Of course, they're going to be throwing sand out of the sandbox. But they were so lovingly and devotedly. It was hot. They were drenched, trying to get all the sand swept up away from the building with such love. And then I walked by, and they sort of said, Shanti, should we really be trying to get every grain of sand? I don't think so. These kids will be back next week or sometime soon. There's going to be sand out here again. But for the love of God, everybody was just serving in the most wonderful way. And we can feel that. That's the kind of enthusiasm it takes. When Gary led our prayer this morning before purification, he said to everybody, God doesn't mind our foibles. He doesn't mind our faults. What he minds is our indifference. Swamiji says that the only way to eradicate the sorrow on the earth, the human suffering, is to eradicate all indifference to God. It's the only way we can go wrong. It doesn't matter where we are in our path. It doesn't matter what we do. It matters if we're indifferent. That is the choice that we need to keep making. And we need to stay aware so that we might be able to know if we're just being tricked by one of our self-styled delusions. When I thought of the qualities that we need to consider when we're talking about how devotees rise, what does it take to rise? The first thing that came to mind, I don't know if Devi used this phrase last week, but I've heard her use it, and I love it. Dynamic awareness. It just says it all. We've got to, when Swami says, he said in that quote, let me just see if I can find it, because he says, but eradicate our indifference, how we eradicate earthly sorrows, human sorrows, by eradicating our difference, he says, then with hard work. It's not easy. That's why we have to keep saying that line. We can't just think that if it's right, it means it just flows. We have to come with extraordinary courage, with commitment, with conviction, with steadfastness, with dynamic awareness. We have to be actively searching for God. That is how we wander, how we move down this path. That's the way. With those qualities, with all of the qualities of that kind of power, that kind of in tune, that kind of work that we saw going on here yesterday, always bringing our attention to the point between the eyebrows, always doing whatever we do, feeding our children, cleaning our house, it doesn't matter. If you do it for God, whether you're cooking a dinner, as Martha was some weeks ago, I was going to say, but I guess I should say some centuries ago, or rubbing your master's feet, or finding God wherever we find him in the world. In the end, what we really need to know is that God's love is always there. It's infinite. It's omnipresent. Nothing changes with God's love. We change. We look towards the darkness and forget to look towards the light. We get caught in our delusions. It doesn't take much to come back and to say, ah, there it is. That's why Jesus had to say, ye have not always. Not because he's gone anywhere. He doesn't need to be sitting in our house. Where would we all be if that were the case? Swamiji's not here. Most of us have never met Master, yet look at us. We're all devoted on this path. Every time we turn our attention, our energy, with great will, with great determination to God, he never went anywhere. He's right there. I was struck last night, and I'll just end with this, with those three lines of Maria Warner. I recently heard somebody just tell a beautiful story. Maria died. It's going to be 5 years in December. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but a beautiful, beautiful devotee. And I know many of you have heard this, but it's so worth reminding ourselves. She had metastatic breast cancer. It had been gone for years. She was about to give a Sunday service in Texas. Her vision started going. She said to her husband, "My cancer's back. It's in my brain." Devar, she said, she got up and gave the most beautiful sermon he'd ever heard her give the next day. And when they came back, they arranged an MRI just to be certain. And Devar, she was understandably getting a little emotional as he was wheeling her in to have the MRI. And she stopped the wheelchair. And she said to him, and these words, which have now, you know, they're in the ether. I was going to say they're in Ananda history, but it's more than that, because this is the essence of the path right here. She said to him, her beloved husband, "Detach yourself. Control the reactive process. Live the teachings." Isn't that just so beautiful? In that moment, she rose and said those beautiful words, caring so deeply about him. But I have often felt over all the years that she said those lines for every one of us, because they get repeated and repeated. I have them in my study. I have them on my computer. I should have them in more places. Detach yourself. Control the reactive process. Live the teachings. God bless you.